Hello, hello, and welcome to another edition of the Irish Golfer Podcast. Ronan McNamara here with Mark McGowan. We've been drafting for another week in place of Peter Finnan. Mark, always a sign of a good team, back to back.
That's it. That's it. All the greats of the game go back to back. We've always said it. We've always said it. Now that we have Finnan out of the road, we can actually make this our own.
Well, that's it. And you never know, if we're kept on long enough, we might even eclipse the dubs. You never know. Before we kick things off, we must mention that we're actually here upstairs in the Island Golf Club. There was a power outage in the Malahide and Portmarnock area, so we had to move to an away venue, which is even more of a challenge for us. But serious thanks for John Kelly and everyone at the Island for giving us the space at such short notice.
Yeah, I mean, we're upstairs in the Island here. I'm looking out over dunes, a fairway. I've never played here before. I'm not familiar with what hole that is, but it looks absolutely incredible. And no disrespect to Concealed Grange, a place we all love, but it's a little bit nicer than looking out over the car park there.
Well, if you do a good job, you might get 9 holes now after this.
Oh, we'll be pushing them hard.
We've plenty to discuss. We have an interview coming up with recent Alps Tour winner Ronan Mullarney. Great to have another winner on the podcast. We went to divulge into PGA Tour, Golf Ireland Roundup, and then, of course, the big one, Solheim Cup at the weekend. Leona Maguire looking to lead Europe to victory again. So we'll kick things off by getting started with the BMW PGA in Wentworth. A fantastic win for Ryan Fox. See what I did there?
I do indeed. It's a great win for Ryan Fox. He's a worthy winner. He's somebody that's been one of the top players in the DP World Tour for the last couple of years, and seems everything I've seen or read about him and everything seems to be a really good guy and very popular. So delighted to see him get the win. But it was a great leaderboard from a European Ryder Cup perspective as well. Most of the names are up there. Everybody made the cut. All 12 were playing, and all 12 made the cut, even though a couple of them just scraped by and didn't cover themselves in glory over the weekend. But yeah, it was a great tournament, and yeah, Fox, a very worthy winner.
Yeah, Luke Donald will be beaming now on his way over to Rome. 7 Ryder Cuppers in the top 10 and 9 in the top 20. It was a mixed week for the Irish. McIlroy threatened early on Sunday that he might put a real charge together, but unfortunately a couple of late pairs ran his race, and Larry again on the fringes of contention, but it was a really good defence from him, in fairness. So, and then Tom McKibben 6 over after 10 holes in round 1, battled back to make the cut, which was fantastic. And Harrington, like, it's even though he missed the cut, it's another signal of his longevity, his first missed cut since January as well. So
definitely no shame. And it's a course that Harrington traditionally hasn't played well at. Did play well in some of the match play events back in the match play days, but it was something I asked him about, and after the final round of the Irish Open the week before, and he just said, yeah, it just, for whatever reason, he hasn't played well there. It's not a course that he typically dislikes or nothing like that. Just doesn't, for whatever reason, it doesn't really suit his game, or it doesn't seem to happen for him there. Shane Lowry, a very good title defense, 2 good weeks back to back, which has definitely silenced some of his critics around his Ryder Cup selection. Unjustly criticized for that in a way, I think. Lowry was going to be on my team all day long if I was Luke Donald, and I think only a suicidal captain would have left Lowry off. But he plodded along really well. He never really got up to the top of the leaderboard. He was always kind of a few shots back, and slightly disappointing finish to Friday's round in the near darkness. I don't know if you're watching when they finished on Friday. It was ridiculous.
I saw him hit the shot into 18, yeah, in the darkness. All right.
So the 18th, they always say the TV cameras make it look a lot brighter than it was. All the TV cameras weren't making it look bright at all. It was, and when they panned back and you saw there was a big scoreboard beside the 18th green, and it was providing the entire light for the area. It was almost like a floodlight, the scoreboard was. But Lowry, he bogeyed 17 and then parred 18, which, when you got 2 par fives to finish, and the bogey in 17 was particularly disappointing, I'd say, because he just cold topped his second shot. this is, ended up playing his third from a long way back, ran it through the green and didn't get up and down. And I mean, you'd probably be expecting, you know, any time a pro stands in a par five, they're expecting to make birdie. You know, par is okay, but birdie is what they're looking for, and bogey is effectively dropping two shots. And when you play those two holes and one over par, it's effectively like a three-shot difference from where he would have been expecting to be. And that was kind of the difference between him going into the weekend, you know, firmly in the mix, and him going into the weekend with, you know, with a lot of ground to make up.
Yeah, it just seemed there was too many momentum starters for Larry over the course of the week, but still, rounds of 69, 71, 67... and 71 with a 9 on Sunday as well, all told. Still a share of 18th place. Couple of really good weeks for him to justify his selection. McIlroy as well, he was a real slow burner all week. Rounds of 72, 71 to start. Kind of got himself into the fringes with a 67 on the Saturday. He was still 10 shots back, but hadn't ruled himself out. And then he went on an absolute tear on the Sunday and shot a 765 to charge into the top 10 in a share of 7th place with Adam Scott. But from a European point of view, Tyrrell Hatton tied 2nd with Aaron Rye, John Rahm 4th place, Victor Hovland 5th place, Tommy Fleetwood 6th, although he was very disappointing on Sunday yet again. Ludvig Åberg, the man who can seemingly do no wrong, had a bit of a lesson learned on Sunday and went with a round of 76 in his final round to finish on 12 under. Still a top 10, but this it now. He's gone. Scar tissue. That's the end of him.
Oh, yeah.
Never see him after Rome.
Sit him until Saturday. Sit him until the singles and the Ryder Cup now.
Call up Morong. And Sepp Straka as well rounded off the Europeans in the top 10 rounds of 70, 66, 69 and 71. Mm-hmm. A man who European fans are starting to get to know a little bit now.
Sepp, the big Austrian. Yeah. I mean, like he's been one of the... I won't say he's been... one of the most consistent players in the PGA Tour, but he's consistently been kind of near the top of leaderboards. He's either seems to contend or, you know, have a top 10, a high place, or he misses the cut and plays absolutely terrible.
Well, so, he's two PGA Tour wins in the last 12 months and he was second in the Open Championship, but I still feel when I look to the team, I need to look for his name just to make sure he's there.
Make sure he's on the team.
Yeah, I just never really noticed him, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose he's suffering from he's playing all his golf, most of his golf in America, and he's not American. And if you're not American and your name's not McIlroy, Hovland, or Rahm or something like that, or maybe Tyrrell Hatton, where anything
not many cameras following you,
anything can happen. Yeah, he's just it tends to be fairly anonymous, and you just generally see they'll cut to Straka when he's holing a birdie putt or something like that. So you see very few of his. See very few of his approach shots, see very few of his drives. Apart from at the Open Championship then when he was emerging as the main contender to Brian Harman, and, you know, we suddenly were seeing loads of him and he seemed to be sticking everything in close. You know, he's a hell of a golfer. I think he's going to be an absolute weapon in the four balls, particularly because he just makes birdies and spades. Not sure if he's going to feature in the foursomes or not. I'd say that'll possibly depend on how he plays in the four ball. But yeah, an absolute four ball weapon.
Exactly. And moving on to the winner, of course, Ryan Fox, the first New Zealander to win at the BMW PGA Championship for his first Rolex series. Whether that means anything or not anymore, no one really knows. But it's an interesting one because before finishing third at the Irish Open a couple of weeks ago, and in fairness to him, he's probably due a win there too. He had no real form all year. But just shows you, only takes a week to get yourself back in the groove. And like, he was fantastic on Sunday, recovering from the early triple bogey to post a rake of birdies, triple bogey to the third, birdied 6, 8, 10, 11, 12, 14, 15, and then that little 6-footer on 18 for a one-shot victory on 18 under par. Like, it was some golf.
It was, and especially for somebody who says that the course doesn't really suit him. He's never played well there before. Again, didn't say he didn't like the course, but just has no previous form to show or to suggest that he does like it or love it. And I mean, he came out and after the rain delay, he was just nails. I mean, I guess a triple bogey in the final round when you're already playing, playing catch up. Now, as it happened, Ludvig Åberg fell back anyway. But I mean, very few players can recover from that. I mean, it takes serious mental fortitude to put a triple bogey in the rearview mirror and go on. I mean, I was like a double bogey. If I'm playing well and I suddenly have a double bogey, I'm all down in the dumps, and I should be expecting double bogeys. Double bogey should be par for the course for me.
Yeah, like I love watching Wentworth, and even with the Irish Open last week at the K Club, you had two golf courses where high teens was the winning score, but you have nearly as many eagles and birdies as you do doubles and triples. So there's so much reward and so much disaster, which I think is really, really good compared to what you get maybe on a regular week on the PGA Tour. It's just drive, wedge, tap it in for birdie, go on. No real disaster unless you have a howler yourself. Personally, like around the K Club and Wentworth, it doesn't take too much to go awry.
It doesn't. No, and the course, I thought the course setup was really good. We all know we haven't had fantastic weather here. Like the last July was terrible, and even though we've had the odd couple of good days, Wentworth should have been pretty soft. But if that was a PGA Tour event where you've got a lot of rain anyway, it would have played like an absolute dartboard. But the greens still had a little bit of firmness to them. Like it wasn't, people weren't just, not everything was just firing at the flags. You still had to, there's still certain holes where you had to, you know, you couldn't take it on. You had to play to the middle of the greens. You couldn't, you know, you couldn't risk going at flags. And the greens seemed to be rolling extremely well. And there was watching on TV, there seemed to be like a lovely shine off them. They looked kind of firm, which, like I say, given the amount of rain, and then we ended up having like torrential showers on Sunday, which called a halt to things for a while. But the course still, it never played like a dartboard.
Yeah, I'd fully agree with you. And moving on from Wentworth, which was obviously a great week, staple event on the Deep World Tour, to an Irish winner on the Alps Tour, Ronan Mullarney picking up his second win of the season, and in doing so, clinches his Challenge Tour card. Absolutely fantastic to see.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Wonderful. And as you said, we're going to have an interview with Ronan coming up now shortly. But he bravely battled through man flu to get the job done there. He was bogey free for the week. It's three rounds of 54 hole events. But anytime you go bogey free and, you know, over three rounds is incredible golf. And I mean, he lapped the field. He finished 16 under. This nearest challenger was 7 under, and you know they're big fields there. We're not talking about like a 30 man field or something. There's, you know, there's 100 odd players and 100 plus in every Alps Tour event. So that's incredible golf, and locks up his Challenge Tour card for next year now. Top of the currently leading the order of merit, and it'll be great to have another Irish face to support on the Challenge Tour next year.
Absolutely, and a good minute university man as well. So rounds of 67, 64, 66 gave Ronan a 9-shot victory at the Haute de France Pas de Calais Open, and he collected a cool 6.4k for his troubles, and we caught up from here just before the podcast.
Ronan fresh off his victory at the Saint-Omer Open on the Alps Tour, second victory of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, lads.
A great win at the weekend. Rounds of 67, 64 and 66. 16 under was the win in total. Fantastic rounds of golf and almost lapping the field. Talk us through it a little bit.
No, it was a great week. I played slightly better each day. First day was okay. My short game kind of got me out of a bit of trouble. Second day was a little bit better, but the final day I played nice golf. I was happy with that. So I was delighted. Obviously, as he gets closer to the finish, I suppose somewhat the pressure mounts a little bit. So I was delighted with the way I played.
And no bogeys for the entire week?
That's always been a goal of mine. I've had it in single rounds. I've never had it in two rounds in a row, and I've never had it in a whole competition. So I'm very proud of that.
But yeah, to do it for an entire tournament, that's something extra special.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I heard... I think it was JT Poston did it for four rounds in the PGA Tour. I think it was about 2 years ago. And I heard that. I thought that was amazing. He's obviously doing much harder golf courses than I'm doing it. But no, I was delighted with that.
So that's now your second win of the season. You've had five top fives in addition to the two wins, and with just the one missed cut on in 13 starts, I believe, on the Alps Tour. So it's been an incredibly consistent season for you.
Yeah. If it was a case of, say, something like two or three wins and a whole rake of missed cuts, that would kind of drive me nuts. Although it might be, especially for third tier golf, that's generally a better way of doing it, because it's quite top heavy, prize wise and points wise. But that would just kind of drive me nuts. So I'm happy enough with the consistency, but obviously stay doing it. It's only the first step in the ladder.
Yeah, so we're going into now, it's basically the regular Alps Tour season is finished. You've got the season ending event now, and you're top of the order of merits. Challenge Tour card secured for 2024. That was the goal at the start of the year?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that was a very clear and distinct goal I had, which is quite obvious, the same for anyone on that tour. So, no, delighted.
Going in as the number one on the order of merits, is that's going to get you assuming you're still number one after the Alps Tour finale, does that get you the highest possible status on the Challenge Tour from the five Alps Tour graduates?
Yeah, so I'm pretty bad at this stuff, which is a bit embarrassing. I should know more, but from what I gather, whether you come first or fifth, you get the same category. But if you come first, you'll be number one of the Alps Tour players within that category. So, like, it's unlikely, but if there was ever an event where it came down to a couple of spots, I'd imagine whoever's ahead will get the spot. But again, I'm not hugely versed on those things.
So you said you didn't exactly play, you know, you played better every day, but in your own kind of words, you'd said you didn't play great in rounds one and two. But putting 67, 64 together with, well, what you're obviously class is not your absolute A game. How do you do that?
I wish I knew. I was okay the first day. It wasn't bad the second day. No, the second day was quite good. The final day was I was very pleased with the final day. But yeah, I don't know. I think it doesn't really matter how well you kind of play. You're always going to go through bad spells. So it's kind of, you know, it's what you can kind of get out of it. My putting was quite good. My short game was good. I've been working, never-ending work on my wedges the last little while, sharpen them up. And that kind of got me out of a lot of trouble. And you know, there's certain shots I didn't feel all that comfortable with, so I just didn't take them on. It's very simple. It sounds very basic, like, but, you know, there's always the ideal shot you see in your head, but sometimes it doesn't really feel all that right. So I just went with what I felt I could pull off best, and worked out this week.
And you saved your best round for last in your head, not in the scorecard necessarily, but
that was by far my best turn. Like the golf was a bit better, but the pins were a little bit tougher. It was a bit breezier. And then obviously in the last round there's a bit more commotion going on. Not that there was massive crowds by any means, but there's always people floating around. It's a little bit different. So no, I was happy with how I played.
Maybe could you tell us a little bit what's life like on the Alps Tour, kind of like a, you know, week to week? It's probably a tour, you know, most the casual golf fan isn't overly familiar with. The money when you win, I think you won €6,400 for the win yesterday. And it's a shade under, just under 25 grand for the year. But so can you talk us through a little bit what life is like day to day on it?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a lot of there's a lot of to and fro, and that week especially was very messy. A very early flight, that's what, 6 o'clock flight over, got there. I actually wasn't delayed for once. That was all right. I got to the airport, but you know, waiting for car rentals, things like that, all these extra charges you're not planning for. But again, like, I'm by no means complaining, because I knew all this. I knew all I was. This was all waiting for me when you turn pro. So yeah, lots of traveling, lots of to and fro. And I was staying with an English guy last week. We got a house just about 15 minutes away. It was actually quite nice. Big difference I've noticed in staying in a house, say, than rather staying in a hotel. It's a lot more, I know, it's like a lot more freedom. You can do a bit of cooking, things like that. You don't have to be eating out all the time. So, but yeah, day to day, it's, yeah, it all revolves on the golf. Like, obviously, when you eat the traveling days, is obviously the travel. We might get 9 holes here and there. But generally, it's all revolving around the golf. And then, obviously, some days or some weeks, you're not feeling as energetic as others. So I always try my best to have as much practice as I can done before I get there. And then when I get there, it's the speed of the greens. It's how far the ball is going. We play the altitude in warmer weather. How the ball reacts on the greens. And then just getting to know the golf course. So it's really not all that different from, I'd say, what any of the amateurs are doing with the championships. It's just they would know the courses. I wouldn't really know any of the courses I've been to this year.
Ronan, just one from me there. You played on the Euro Pro Tour last year, and obviously we know that doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. Just what sort of limbo did that kind of throw you in? Because I know you had to go to Obstor Q school. Like, it's not an easy place to be as a young aspiring professional either.
No, far from it. And especially when your first round at Abs Q School was, I think, 4 over or something. What was it? No, it was worse. I think it was 5 over. I was in the bottom 6 or 7 after the first round of Abs Q School last year. I remember sitting in the car thinking, oh dear, this isn't ideal. Far from it. But it definitely was a strange one, because we only found out the Euro Pro was going towards the very end of the season, which again was like another kick in the you know where. So it's, yeah, it definitely was. That was actually quite hard. But obviously it's great to have the Alps, to have it there and to have the same opportunity. And there's obviously a few of the Irish guys on it. I played a couple of events. I had a small taste for what it was like, but not really. But again, like, I had to play somewhere. So it's lucky played well the last 2 rounds in Q School, and it's worked out well since from there.
Yeah, and obviously we all know Alps Tour kind of has an intermittent season, doesn't always go week for week. You have long periods off. So playing Challenge Tour next year, the opportunity to have more regular starts, like, you can only see yourself sort of improving with more action as well.
Yeah, like, if golf made sense, what you're after saying there would make perfect sense, but golf doesn't make any sense. So I don't know what's to await next year, but it is more of a, how would you word it, I suppose, a regular tour, in that there's a lot of events and you don't necessarily play them all. So you can kind of pick and choose. Now again, it'll be kind of the same as this year on Alps. Like, I've played a couple of Challenge Tour, not many. So I won't necessarily know many of the golf courses. It's been a while since I've played 4 rounds of golf in competition as well. So that's something to bring back to the amateur days. And yeah, it's just new environments and things like that. It's all, like, it's great saying it's all golf, and it is all golf, but all these little things are just things that make you feel either a little more comfortable or a little less comfortable. So they all add up to something, but what that is anyone's guess.
And you said, so you said earlier on, you're a little bit under the weather. Still, but very much appreciate you joining us.
I've man flu, lads. I'm fine.
You've man flu.
Yeah, I get over it.
It's not a hangover.
No, I wish. It's definitely not that.
Well, when did the man flu set in? Were you playing under the weather at the weekend?
Yeah. So when I got there, it's pretty much as soon as I got there, I knew there was something not quite right, but I thought it was just the travel and things like that, being on plane and stuff like that. And then that was 2 days before. Then the day before, I was okay, didn't really pass any remarks. The first day was probably towards the end of the first day is when it started to kind of kick in. Second day, the tournament didn't feel great. I have to say, the last day, I didn't feel good at all. But it's quite a tough walk as well. Kind of a blessing in disguise. Like, when you're not feeling great, you don't really have time to be thinking about much, but bar what you have to think about. So yeah. It all worked out okay. It's no excuse either way.
Lovely. Well, last question, and then we'll let you get back into the bed with the hot water bottle. The DP World Tour Q School, is that something you're considering going for this year? I know you were focused on the Alps Tour event this week. But there are other first stage events coming up. Are you going to have a go at them?
Yeah, so I'm lucky enough because of the Alps Tour this year, when the cutoff for the entry of Q School was out, I think it's the top six in Alps Tour get through to second stage. So I'm into second stage, which is the first week in November. And then hopefully final stage is the week after that. So definitely every year you'd always play Q School, unless you're obviously on the DP World Tour. But absolutely, Q School is the golden ticket.
Well, thanks very much for joining us, Roland. Congratulations again on the win of the weekend. And it's great to see Irish lads doing well on tour, and going to have another man on the Challenge Tour next year. All the best, Roland. Cheers.
Perfect, boys. Thanks a million.
Brilliant to have Ronan on. He was a quiet fella, but he was pretty happy inside, I'm sure.
He definitely was. Now, fair play to him. He got out of bed to do it for us. He was just a little bit under the weather, as you said. But yeah, I mean, look, it's a tough life on the Alps Tour. I mean, he's like as he describes there. You know, it's far from the glitz and glamour. But it's a stepping stone, and all the you know, a lot of young aspiring professionals have to go through it. And I guess, you know, to appreciate the view from the summit, you have to, you know, suffer the ascent. And I mean, he's definitely going through it, you know, the right way. He's going to appreciate every Challenge Tour start he gets next year. Fingers crossed that he goes through Q School and gets on to the DP World Tour proper. But if he doesn't, I mean, Q School is obviously a minefield and extremely hard to get through. But if he doesn't, he's going to have a full season on the Challenge Tour to look forward to. And he's been so consistent this year on the Alps Tour. Just the one missed cut, and that came in the second event of the season, over in Egypt, I think it was. And no more than myself and yourself, Ronan probably wouldn't be a man who would fare best under like a bacon sun of the Reds along the Red Sea. But his season's been fantastic, and I mean, may continue into next year.
Yeah, and he's been a regular player on the Alps Tour this year as well. Now he tops the order of merit now after his latest win after 13 events. And Paul McBride was 12th as well, and he's 17th in the order of merit heading into the grand final. So he still has an outside chance to get one of those top five positions in the order of merit and get himself a Challenge Tour card. Like, it's been a tour that's, while it is small and there are plenty of weeks off in between, not always regular action, it's been good to Irish players. You know, David Carey was always up there in the order of merit over the last few years. Obviously, Johnny Yates had his win there last year as well. And then we saw what the Alps Tour did to Gary Hurley and the kickstart it gave him. He went and won his Challenge Tour card, then got onto the DP World Tour. So I suppose for the likes of Ronan and Paul, and they see what Johnny and Gary have been able to do, it should give them motivation and a bit of inspiration that, you know, you can build yourself, build your game on this tour and, you know, kick on.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no, like, it's very definitely a competitive tour. I mean, like, there's a lot of good players play on it, and as you just mentioned, the Irish guys that come through, there's a lot of good players are playing on this. And I mean, it's definitely like this to win every week, you need to be shooting, you know, 12, 15 under minimum for, you know, for 54 whole events. And that's like, no matter what level of golf, or no matter how golf courses are set up, if you need to be shooting 5-6 under every day to win tournaments, like, that's, you know, it's a lot of pressure, because one bad round, one bad day, one bad shot can easily derail things. And, you know, when you're left to trying to play catch up, it can be a very difficult thing to do. And yeah, as you said, David Carey came through it. Obviously, David Carey shot his 57 on the Alps Tour, so, like, I mean, that's done wonders for his career, for his online presence and everything. So yeah, the Alps Tour has been extremely good to Irish lads.
But like, it is serious pressure, and we always discuss, you know, the big tours, Deep World Tour, PGA Tour, the majors, and say, oh, the pressure being under the gun. Like, I always say, I think the pressure of trying to play for your career, like, on the mini tour is serious, because Ron was speaking there, like, he had a bad round first day of Q School, and he'd just fallen off the Europro Tour, which disappeared quite late on in the year. So, on flip side of the coin is, he misses the cut in Q School, and you don't really know what you're at then for the year as well.
Yeah, I mean, Ronan probably would have, actually gone. Not even going to guess. I'm not sure what he would have done this year if he didn't qualify for the Alps in the Alps Tour Cruise School. And yeah, it is a serious grind. I mean, look, Ronan's won or leading the Order of Merit. Ronan's got 25. He's won 25 grand in prize money this year. That's, you know, he's played 13 events. Every single one of those events require a couple of flights, accommodation for a couple of days. You're getting a rental car, and you have to, you know, feed yourself and everything like that. Like, I mean, he's probably covered. He's covered his expenses, but he probably hasn't done a whole lot more than that. And that's the guy that's leading the Order of Merit. So it's a really tough life. And they're all playing there to get off it. I mean, there's not a single player there on the Alps Tour who's looking to be on the Alps Tour again next year. You know, graduation is the thing. And that's what, like, I've spoken to Ronan a few times this year, and that was kind of what he always said. Cause I was, you know, we were always talking about the top five, which was his goal and everything. But he was saying, well, that's the goal, but that's the goal for this year. You know, bigger and better things is what I'm looking for. He's not looking to be playing on the challenge. He wanted to be playing on the challenge tour next year, but he's not looking to be playing on the challenge tour in 2 or 3 years time. He's targeting the top tier, and he's definitely got the golfing ability in him. We've seen, you know, he's qualified for the Open a couple of years ago, which is, again, going through Open qualifying is an extremely hard thing to do. You need to turn up and play 36 holes on, you know, against elite players in the game, and he's done that. So he's definitely got the ability to kick on.
Hopefully his buddy Bryson sent him a congratulatory text. But no, in all seriousness, seriously, best luck to Ronan in the future. He's through to the second stage of DP World Tour Q School as well, so another opportunity beckons for him. Moving on, just to round up the Irish action over the weekend, we had the Challenge Tour, which took place in Portugal, Open to Portugal at Royal Obidos. Anyone who's played in Portugal might be familiar with the golf course. England's Marco Penge cruised to his first tour victory on 16 under par. Best of the Irish was Dermot McElroy in a share of 27th place on 6 under par, with Conor Purcell 2 shots further back in 31st. Bit of a ho-hum week for the lads. Johnny Yates 56th on +1 rounded off the Irish action there. You know, Conor Purcell will probably be slightly bit disappointed after the high of making the cut of the Irish Open, but he still has time to kick on. He's still 33rd in the road to Mallorca with 3 regular events remaining to get himself into the top 20 and earn that deep World Tour card.
Yeah, I guess, look, probably the way he'll look at it is just like time is running out. You know, it's definitely still possible, but with only three events left, you know, you're going to have to do something really, well, not necessarily special, but you're going to have to perform really well in one of them. Now, I mean, he could easily go out there and perform well in all three of them. He's definitely got it in the locker. Like, but it would, like, he'll be bitterly disappointed if he doesn't make it, considering he's given himself a chance going into the last few events. Not that it would be something he should be disappointed with, but I mean, he naturally will be.
Yes, absolutely. And moving on, Leona Maguire could move over now in the spotlight and let Lauren Walsh in after another great week. On her LET Tour debut, she finished in a share of 13th place over in Switzerland. I mean, she looked extremely, extremely comfortable.
I mean, she does. I mean, this is her first LET start. Is it her first LET start ever?
First LET start, I think, yeah.
Yeah.
She's been playing on the Access Tour for the last few weeks, but like, she missed out on getting her LPGA card in Q School, but you know, if she can keep playing well towards the end of the year and get herself, you know, some sort of status on the LET for next year, like, it's a fantastic tour to kind of make your way in the pro game and get yourself on the board.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, as you said, she's played three Access Series events, and she's had like a top 10 in all three of them, including a runner-up finish. And now the Access Series is obviously a lower standard than the Ladies European Tour. But I mean, to come out there as, you know, just having graduated from college, in no way underwhelmed or overwhelmed, I should say, stepping into the pro ranks, and a tied 13th finish. I think she made close to €6,000 at the weekend.
I actually don't know. Yes, she made $5,500, which is a lot considering Ronan Mullarney only got just over six grand for winning on the Alps Tour. But like opening round of 71, a blistering second round of 65, and a final round of 70, like that's serious consistency. And it was good to see her finish under par on the Sunday as well, because she was in the fringes of contention going into the final round as well. So good to see that she wasn't quite overawed by it all.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, I would say she had an outside chance going in. She needed to do something special, I would say. Obviously, just didn't quite happen. But yeah, around the 70s, you know, an extremely good return in contention in your biggest. I know she's had an LPGA tour start and she's played in LPGA Q school, but this was her first chance to win a big professional event. With all respect to the Access Series events, she's entering those expecting to be contending for the victory. She was probably entering this LET event, you know, hoping to make the cut, and you know, from there anything was a bonus. And well, she made the cut and got herself into contention. So it's a wonderful week for her, and hopefully, I don't know how many more starts she's going to get in LET. Hoping she's going to get a couple more sponsors invitations, and if she does, and if she continues performing the way she has, she's in with an outside chance of you know, securing a card for next year. Anyway, I think there's maybe six events left in the LET season. I don't know where I'm pulling that figure out of now. That could be.
I'm not bothered checking. I'm just going to move on to the PGA Tour, where Sahith Theegala finally got his first PGA Tour win at the Fortinet Championship. Like, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Like, and it's about time as well. He's been knocking on the door the last couple of years, a couple of heartbreaking double bogeys in the last hole and lip outs and all sorts been going wrong for poor El Sahith, but great to finally get over the line for him.
Yeah, well, he hasn't been out there that long, has he, to finally get his first tour win? But you're right, he has that chance. And I mean, he got the worst break I think we've ever seen, or one of the worst breaks we've ever seen at the Waste Management Phoenix Open. Was it
two years ago?
Yeah, when he like had a tee shot that looked perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Took an outrageous kick and I think went through the green into the water. Ended up losing by a shot. It was, you know, extremely bad luck. But I mean, yeah, he seems like a great guy. Everything I've read, everything I've seen about him. I didn't actually see the Netflix episode with him in it.
It's fantastic. It's one of the best ones. But like he had another heartbreaking moment then at the Travelers Championship as well. Do you remember? I think he doubled the last to let Schauffele win. Maybe,
yeah, could have been. I think he hit, drove it into the bunker and then hit the lip.
Yeah,
the bunker. I think, yeah, if I remember. But he's a very interesting player to watch because he is wild off the tee. He finished this week, I think it was like 42nd or 43rd in strokes gained off the tee, something along those lines. And it's very rare you see somebody winning on the PGA Tour now that isn't in the top 10 and strokes gained off the tee for the week. So yeah, he was kind of all over the place. Every tee box he stepped up on, there was the potential for the ball to go anywhere.
For a disaster.
But his approach game once he got off the tee was extremely good. I think he was top 20 in approach, and then third and second respectively, I think, in around the greens and putting. So this was definitely this was one of those weeks where that old, you know, drive for show, putt for dough thing actually came through. You know, and it's a cliche, but it doesn't tend to ring that true in the PGA Tour anymore. You know, it's very rare you see somebody win it with their putter primarily. You know, the driver is the big weapon in the bag for most of these guys. So yeah, it was, and I don't know, maybe I think I just love watching golf in California. There's, you know, and particularly this time of year, The courses are courses play firm. There's no, you know, this was when you compare it to like the Tour Championship or the was it the BMW Championship that was in Memphis, you know, where they like, you know, in the southern states and this time of year where the courses just get bucketed on, you know, like it's a torrential amounts of rainfall, extremely heat or extremely hot, really humid, and then loads of rainfall. So the courses play extremely soft, like we were talking about earlier on. They just play like dartboards. But when you go to California, I mean, I don't know when it last rained in California, but it didn't look as though there was any this week. And I mean, you have golf is much more interesting when the ball runs. You know, when you've got drives that are hitting the fairway and stopping, and you've got balls that are hitting the green and stopping, that's
boring.
This is extremely boring to watch. When you've got a ball that hits the fairway and you're like, oh, this could be in the middle of the fairway, or this could be in bunker or deep rough or anything, it's so much more entertaining to watch. And Tagala is a very entertaining player. So it was a great, he was a fitting winner for the tournament. And now he had huge amounts of family and friends there, and the American TV coverage completely overdid it with Tagala's dad. Tagala's father was there, and the camera spent more time on him on the Sunday, I think, than it spent on Tagala himself. And
well, it's an emotional time. Like, he's after watching his son win 500 FedEx Cup points. Like, come on, this doesn't happen every day. What have you done?
It does not. Well, I don't think I've won a single FedEx Cup point, actually. That's...
But no, it was a great to see him win. And just interestingly, on the Ryder Cup front, Justin Thomas picked up just his fourth top 10 of the year with a fifth place finish there. And defending champion Max Homa was seventh. So they're coming into a bit of form heading into the Ryder Cup. We had loads of Golf Ireland stuff on over the weekend. Plenty of interclub action on in Knightsbrook. But first, Vera Hanlon was the winner of the Leinster Senior Women's Close Championship. Meanwhile, Barna retained their title in the AIG Women's Junior Foursomes after beating Dromoland in the final in Knightsbrook, and Limerick won their fifth AIG Men's Junior Cup title, beating Greystones in the decider there. Gowran Park won the Revive Action Women's Fourball, and Banless Low ended a 129-year wait for senior interclub glory as they defeated Malahide in the final of the Flowgas Mix Foursomes in Knightsbrook as well. And finally, our friends over in Spanish Point won the Piers Purcell.
Yeah, in doing research for this podcast, I did realize that the Clare Echo ran an article 2 years ago in which they pointed out with the Irish Golfer podcast not being overly complimentary to the Piers Purcell and their the Spanish Point and their Piers Purcell win. We're not going to go there.
We weren't there. We weren't, not our fault. We not our here. Problem. Not our problem.
So I'm not familiar with them. I didn't see any of it. I know nothing about it. No lawsuits.
Just take your pendant and go. Moving on to an absolutely massive event now on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's of course the Solheim Cup, and Irish eyes will be firmly fixed on Leona Maguire as she looks to repeat her record-breaking rookie performance of 2 years ago, where she won a staggering 4.5 points out of five. And really carried the fight to the USA. Europe in Finke Courtesan now this weekend, looking to win their third successive Solheim Cup for the first time in their history. Like, it's a massive week for Leona to be part of something that could be just historic for European golf and European women's golf.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely huge for given her exploits at Inverness 2 years ago. You know, she'll be very much under the spotlight this week. You know, everybody's going to be. Possibly unfairly expecting a repeat performance, which is going to be extremely hard to do. I mean, anytime you play in these team events, if you have a winning record, if you like 2.5, 1.5, or 3-2, or something like that, you've more than covered yourself in, you know, for the week. I mean, to go 4.5 out of 5 points as she did the last time around is, you know, was unprecedented for a rookie. One of the only a couple of people have ever gone 5-0 in the Solheim Cup. So, I mean, it's going to be extremely hard for her to replicate that. But she's a chance. The European team are very strong. I think both teams are actually kind of very equally matched this time. It's quite often you go into these events and one side on paper appears much stronger than the other. I wouldn't say that's the case this year. I think the two teams are very evenly matched. Both, we've got multiple LPGA Tour winners on both teams. You know, this season, multiple LPGA Tour winners.
Well, USA have three players inside the top 10, including world number one, Lilia Vu, while Suzanne Patterson's European have two players inside the top 10 in the women's world rankings, and they are Celine Boutier and Charlie Hull, with Leona Maguire next best at 14th. So, like, it is relatively evenly matched, to be fair. Like, I think for some reason, maybe Europe are slight outsiders, even though it's on home soil and they're starting to have maybe a period of dominance in the competition. But I'm expecting this to be a really tight one again, like it has been for the last couple of years.
It has been, yeah. I think even the last one in Inverness, when on the scoreboard at the end of it all, Europe, I think, won by, was it a three point win?
Well, like it wasn't, the scoreline didn't reflect how tight the singles were.
I mean, yeah, at various stages during the singles, like the projected leaderboard was tied at stages, and it was looking to be really close. I think on the Leona front, I think she's a much better player now than she was 2 years ago. In general, like her she's so consistent now that Leona's floor is really, really high. Even when she's, and I would say possibly since the PGA Championship, when she led through 54 holes, I would say since then she hasn't had her A game on any given week. But I don't think she's missed a cut in that time period. And she's had a couple of sort of like 15th, 20th places. I think she was fourth at the Aramco Team Series, which is a small field. So she did really well there, but it's kind of hard to count that as a true top five, you know, in relation to, or in comparison to a full field event.
Look at you getting picky, huh? Jesus. But no, you're right. Like, it'll be interesting to see how she gets on this year, because her partner in crime from Ohio, Mel Reed, wasn't picked by Suzanne Patterson. It's that was an interesting one, because certainly with the Ryder Cup, in particular the USA team, we've seen a couple of selections based on potential pairings, whereas Suzanne seems to have lent the other way. Only Georgia Hall played with Leona in Ohio, who's been picked for the squad this time round. So it'll be interesting to see who's paired with her. I'm sure there'll be no shortage of candidates and no shortage of people maybe even going to Suzanne and asking to play with Leona, because she is so versatile in terms of like four ball and foursomes.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if she doesn't pair up with Georgia Hall in at least one or two of the matches. The two of them, like, would, you know, sort of came up together. Would have had, you know, would have been, I think they're quite close friends. So I'd be surprised if they didn't come out together at one stage. Plus, they won their match together at Inverness. But yeah, I think there's a lot of potential pairings there. As you said, with Leona, she is so versatile. She's so consistent that I think you can play her with anybody. She'll, you know, and you have options. You could, and you know, all team tactics always come into it. Sometimes people like to, in the four balls, they like to maybe put a consistent player with maybe a little bit of a sort of like more erratic player, because they're thinking, well, the erratic player will get birdies on various holes, and if they are out of the hole, the consistent player will keep you in it. But then the alternative approach is, well, if you put two consistent players, you're always going to have two chances on a hole to make a birdie. So it's hard to know. It's always kind of one of those things where, you know, the captain, if things work out right, then the captains are geniuses for their picks, and if they don't go wrong, then everybody's calling them an idiot, which is extremely unfair, given that once the players cross that white line, it's out of the captain's hands.
Yeah, once they get onto that first tee, it's interesting you should say about like picks. If it works out, you look great. If it doesn't, you look with a bit of egg on your face. Caroline Hedwall was a controversial selection, adding to the already massive Swedish contingent on the team. She hasn't played too much golf this year. Form hasn't been great, but I suppose if anyone knows what it's like to sort of be brought in from the cold and perform. It is Suzanne Pettersen after what she did in 2019. Like, she's been away for almost 2 years on maternity leave and comes up and holds the winning post. And I suppose she'd nearly pick herself if she could as well this week.
It's possibly the greatest mic drop in sports to come back, particularly after the controversy of a couple of years previous, where, you know, the not given Puttgate, if anybody remembers this. So there was a major controversy where she didn't concede a short putt, and then the Americans scooped the ball up, and the Europeans claimed the hole. It was probably something that Suzanne Pettersen shouldn't have done at the time. I think we'd all say that in the spirit of the game, it was a slightly it was with outside the spirit of the game, let's say. But then to come back, as you said, 2 years out on maternity leave, I think she made one start in the lead up to it, didn't play well, and then comes out and clinches the winning putt in the last match, and then just immediately retires. it was absolutely fantastic, and no better person for the big occasion than Suzanne.
Yeah, that Puttgate moment was quite funny. It was a real case of the experienced player with the youngster and Charlie Hull at the time. Like, you wouldn't get away with the club match play now at all.
You'd get a putter to the back of the head.
No, there's times I play in team golf in my club, and if I'm with an elder statesman, to put it like that, I'd shy away from giving points. I'd be like, I'll leave that to him. Well, he'd give the all. Given. Like, that's fine, move on. I'd stay away from all that kind of thing.
Yeah, you say, well, you give that, will we look at that, or will we give that, and you get that, no effing way.
So that should be a fantastic weekend. Hopefully Europe can bring it home and kick off one leg of a potential double, all things going well. We've got Golf Ireland action this weekend as well, or this week, sorry, with the North of Ireland up in Portrush. Hugh Foley defends his title, and there's a strong field penciled in for this. Irish Close champion Rob Moore and Peter O'Keefe, South of Ireland champion Colly Campbell, Irish international David Sheehan are all set to compete, and there's a good international field competing as well. Like, we've Dylan Shaw Radford coming over from England, a couple of Belgian players, a couple of French players playing as well. So, and of course we've 16 qualifiers to get their place after today's qualifying round. So should be a great week. And again, like, you have the final big event on the Golf Ireland schedule. Like, the course they play are absolutely outrageous.
They are. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you think, like, if I was anywhere near the bubble of being able to be low enough to qualify into these events, or to get into the qualifiers for these events, just to get playing a Portrush, you know, itself, like, you'd definitely be entering. I'd definitely be taking a chance. The courses we play, I mean, between County Sligo for the west, Lahinch for the south,
the island we're looking out,
the island which we're looking out at here now, which is looks absolutely incredible. And the more I look out, the more I'm anticipating we're definitely going out to play nine holes, no matter what happens here. And then, of course, the Royal Portrush for the north. And I mean, for anybody that didn't already have Royal Portrush on the bucket list of courses to play, you know, when you got to watch the Open in 2019 and get to see it again now in 2025, I mean, it's 100% one I'd be marking. If I was an amateur, a top amateur player, it'd be one of the first ones I'd be marking on my calendar for the year. It's like, I'm going to that one way or the other.
Yes, absolutely. And if you're around the area, go up and watch. Forecast doesn't look particularly pleasing, but I'm sure if you bring an umbrella, you should be all right. Right, Mark, to finish off, what's been another fantastic edition, wouldn't you say? Like, we've really outdone ourselves here back-to-back in an away venue such as this. Your heroes and your villains.
Yeah, if anybody had any idea the hardship we went through here trying to bring our podcast studio mobile here, get everything set up, working on dodgy Wi-Fi, well, It's only dodgy because we've chosen like the furthest recesses of the clubhouse to do it in here, away from people. And even though we did have a man come in with a cup of tea and a sandwich there halfway through it and give us a weird look, but
wouldn't come on the podcast, which is, you know, slightly hurtful, but we move on.
Heroes and villains, the number one segment, the reason everybody listens to this podcast. Okay, hero, I gotta go with Ronan Mullarney.
You've nothing written down, do you?
I do. I actually do. That's pretty much all I've written down. Everything else was off the top of my head here. I'm not. I'm I'm extremely unprofessional when it comes to doing these sort of things. Yeah, Ronan Mullarney's my hero. It's not too often we get Irish winners on tour. You know, regardless of what tour it's on. We have been a little bit spoiled in recent years that we've regularly had winners on the PGA Tour and on the DP World Tour, but very seldom we get one on the Challenge Tour. And I mean, Ronan's had his second win of the year in the Alps Tour. It's fantastic to see, and to do it all whilst battling man flu, got to take your hat off to that. My hero.
He's a better man than most.
he's definitely a better man than me. I'd have been out there feeling sorry for myself for just deliberately missed the cut.
And you're a villain.
My villain. I've got a couple of villain candidates. Actually, something we didn't talk about was the PGA Tour not allowing the Ryder or the Netflix cameras into the team room. Now, which comes as no surprise. In fairness, I don't want if I was in the Ryder Cup team room, I wouldn't want cameras anywhere near me. I'd like to think that it's pure hatred and they're pure war.
I'd say it's full. Let's go Wildcats in there.
Like Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth and these lads and Ricky Fowler are all great mates with Rory McIlroy week in, week out. I'd like to think in a Ryder Cup team room, they're just going there saying, we want to absolutely stomp on it. We want to make Rory cry again. And this, like this kind of stuff, you know, and 100% they don't want to see the cameras there for that. But in terms of villains for this, for some reason, Xander Schauffele's father was a spokesman for this. I have no idea how or why, but he's a great Stefan Schauffele, isn't it, his name is? But he somehow always manages to find himself in the limelight. He's like, what's that social media term? Like Thurston, is it? Jody,
our social media manager here should be able
the
to
thirst. Yeah, he is the thirstiest man going. Somehow managed to be available for comment on it. God knows why, but so that he's one villain, and I kind of crowbarred him in there because I'm not particularly keen on him, and I just always want to make him a villain. Secondly, I'm gonna go for Jimmy Walker. Walker, do you not know it?
He's battling Lyme disease. Leave him alone.
He battled Lyme disease. That's fucking years ago.
You've no sympathy at all.
He's back from it. Jimmy Walker suddenly decided to give out yards this week about the PGA Tour being, you know, the number of cards they don't dish out being reduced from 125 to 70, which is something that we've known all year long. That we knew all year long this was happening. Apparently the players knew, there was like a good 18 months ago that this is what was happening, that the cards were being reduced. Any guesses where Jimmy Walker finished in the top 125? Why he has such a big issue about the top 125 not getting in?
125?
124. Close. Oh. Just in by one. I mean, no offense to Jimmy Walker. He's been a journeyman pro for most of his career, had a couple of good years where he reeled off a few wins,
major
stole a major, which is the least memorable major of the last decade, I would say. But I mean, nobody cares about Jimmy Walker. That's the truth. I'm sorry to say, Jimmy Walker, I'm not fit to hold his jocks when it comes to golf. I'm fully aware of that, but nobody cares about him. Jimmy, stop sounding off. Play better golf and you'll sort it out.
This will be the last time you're on the podcast. My hero is Sergio Garcia. I've gone for a couple of controversial ones here.
I just controversial.
Think set of balls on him just to hand over 700 grand and say, let us into the Ryder Cup. Like, for people who don't know, James Corrigan of The Telegraph reported that Sergio Garcia, in a last ditch attempt to make Luke Donald's Ryder Cup team this month in Rome, decided to try and fork over his £700,000 fine that he had refused to pay earlier in the year for leaving the DP World Tour to go and play on LIV Golf. DP World Tour officials laughed him out of the room.
Can I ask a question here? Did he not say, I will pay this if you let me play in the Ryder Cup? Is this not contingent? He's like, okay, I know the way you find me. The only way I'm going to pay that fine is if you let me play in the Ryder Cup.
I'm sure the conversations would have been along those lines, yes, but I just think the nerve of the fella, like, fair play to you.
So just be clear, he's your hero now, right?
Yeah. That's okay. I was struggling for heroes today.
I can't wait to hear your villain.
Tommy Fleetwood.
Does Hitler play golf?
You might have played a few holes now and again, like. But no, my villain is Tommy Fleetwood.
Your hero is Sergio Garcia, and your villain is Tommy Fleetwood. All right, yeah. I'm gonna enjoy hearing you justify this.
Jody's not having this. Right, Tommy Fleetwood. Rounds of 69, 66, 67, and 72. How many more Sundays is this bottler going to throw away?
So he's a villain for not playing well.
Single Sunday. I can forgive it almost on the PGA Tour, because there is a thing with English players finding it tough to win the PGA Tour. Justin Rose found it tough. Yeah, Hatton found it tough for a while. Poulter found it tough for a while. And I think Ian Poulter is a better player than Tommy Fleetwood's ever been in his life.
Tommy Fleetwood can't beat Ian his chest
Ian Poulter had more nerve than Tommy Fleetwood's ever had.
Ian Poulter, yeah, he had more nerve. That's on a Sunday. I'll give you that. He had more nerve to go calling himself the postman who always delivers and thumping his chest after he went 2-2 in the last Ryder Cup.
No, but I'm
50% record. What kind of a postman would only deliver 50% of the letters?
Still doing his job. You just put in a shit postcode. That's your problem. But I know, I'm a fan of Tommy Fleetwood, but I'm sick and tired of these measly, weak, wishy-washy efforts every solitary Sunday. Yeah. And as I said, I can forgive it almost on the PGA Tour. He had a bit of bad luck, like not beating Nick Taylor in the playoff, even though he probably should have won it in normal holes. And he had a couple more chances then towards the end of the FedEx Cup season. But like, just the way he played there in Wentworth on Sunday was a disgrace.
Well, I'm disappointed for Tommy. I'd love to see Tommy
win. I'm starting to fall out of love with him. I'm not buying this thing. He's the next English major winner. I'm starting to lose that gravitas towards him. I'm not having it.
I just think villain's a bit harsh.
You have to pick someone.
That's true. But I mean, you could have picked Jimmy Walker.
But I don't care about Jimmy Walker.
A true villain.
I care about European issues.
Well, I've always been somebody who had cast my eye across the Atlantic. I always considered myself quite, quite Californian.
Looking at the Atlantic over your views of Ross's Point. That's what you're doing.
Next stop, New York.
Right. I apologize to everyone for that rant, even though I think I'm 100% right. Mark, will we get three in a row?
Ooh, that'd mean me coming to Dublin three Mondays in a row.
To be fair, you nearly came up here today for nothing.
That is true. I nearly turned around as soon as I came into the office and saw that we were in darkness. Next week, I think I'm going to have to get the mobile podcast studio set up in order to get next week in. But you never know.
But we're not letting Peter in on this at all. He's on the side now.
Is he going to be back next week?
Doesn't matter. Don't need him.
Yeah,
need him. We haven't missed him at all these last 2 weeks. Like, no. I don't know what he's at.
No, I mean, in fairness, look, we've learned from it. We've kicked on.
Yeah. We've learned from this and we've kicked on. Right. Yeah. Everyone, thanks very much for listening. And if it is our last time together as a GO, it's been real.
It has indeed. Just like, let us know how much you don't want Finnan back.
Yeah, if we put out a poll on Twitter or on Facebook, vote for us or vote for Pete to come back. Let the people have their say.
I think Pete'll have his bots on the fucking case.
Ah, he will. Still, we'll take like the Court of Arbitration for Sport or something. That sort of day.
Good enough.
All right, thanks very much, everybody, and good luck.